Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We will be joined by Peter King, 95.7 The Game, NFL insider. You know him, you love him, NBC Sports, and all of our guests appear on the Dialpad guest line. Peter is brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Visit friedmansappliance.com today. And Peter, we have been tossing around the clock management questions from last night's game over the last 20 minutes or so. And so just in general, because there are a few complaints about Kyle Shanahan's handling of the clock from the late in overtime, throwing it three times, the choice not to go for it to potentially get closer for a potential game-winning kick, and even some stuff in the fourth quarter as well. Where do you stand generally on how Kyle Shanahan handled the clock last night?
Well, I've heard through the course of the day today that Kyle Shanahan should not have called three straight passes. And I get that. And I'm probably on their side. But let's say you call a run on first down and you don't get very much. So let's say it's second and eight. Well, if you're going to try to win the game, you're going to throw the next two times.
Yep.
If you're incomplete on second down, you're going to throw on third down. So now, instead of Seattle getting the ball back with whatever it was, 135, or I forget, I don't have it in front of me, but let's say they got it back with 135. Instead of getting them back with 135, they're going to get it back with a minute to go. I mean, is that really going to amount to a hill of beans? I mean, maybe, and maybe you can quibble with the calls he actually made on the pass plays. But either the only way that you're going to have a chance to, to really limit the chances of the Seahawks, driving and winning the game is running twice. It's the only way. Or running three times and then the game's over, unless you make the first down, obviously. So I guess what I would say is I understand people who don't like the play calls, but at the end of the day, I just recorded a podcast interview today with a guy from Pro Football Focus named Eric Eager, who's the chief strategic analyst or something. I forget his title. But Eric Eager said that the odds of the 49ers throwing three straight incompletions, chances of that, were 12.5%. And so, even though Jimmy Garoppolo was having a shaky night up to that point, it's highly unlikely that he was going to throw three straight incompletions. He did, and it's one of those things that the reason why everybody's talking about it is because it failed. But, and I know what Shanahan said after the game, but I'm not really sure that that's exactly how he feels. I bet if he had it to do over again, and he really was trying to win the game, which I believe he was trying to do, that he might throw it three times in a row again.
Okay, all that said, Seattle wins. And as a result of the weekend in totality, what did we learn about the NFC, at least the top end of it, that we might not have necessarily known before?
Well, Ray, I guess I would just say this, that I'll give you my two biggest takeaways from the weekend in the NFC. Number one is that everybody gets to have a mulligan. I did in my column after the Patriots lost to the Ravens by 17 points 2 weeks ago, I wrote about how they had in six Super Bowl seasons, Super Bowl championship seasons, they had a terrible double-digit loss in every year. And so I don't think it's that big a deal that the Atlanta Falcons just kill the Saints. I don't see it. I just don't think it's that big a deal. So let's see how the Saints come back. You know, they got three consecutive division games, but so I don't think that Green Bay's loss to the Chargers last week or the Saints and the 49ers losing in somewhat desultory fashion. One, you know, the Saints certainly much more so. But the Niners losing the way they did, I'm not bothered by it very much. We'll see if it continues. I would say the one other thing I took away from this weekend is that even though his receivers did him no favors, I think that this was a slight alarm clock game for Jimmy Garoppolo. He did not play well. You need to overcome losses of players if you're going to be a great quarterback. Russell Wilson overcame the loss of his best receiver, you know, on the heels of 2 weeks ago losing his tight end for the year, who had really emerged as a very good player, and on the verge, on the heels of, in the offseason, losing far and away his best wide receiver in Doug Baldwin. So, you know, when you lose players, that's the way life goes. Russell Wilson threw a pass on the first play of overtime to some guy I never heard of in my life. I didn't know who it was. When I saw, okay, he passed it to, and I forget the guy's name right now, but I'd never heard of him before. So,
or since, apparently.
And what's that?
Or since, apparently.
No, yeah, I just forgot the guy's name. But and then twice, once in the fourth quarter, once in overtime, he hits Josh Gordon to convert on third down. In overtime to convert when Josh Gordon is being blanketed by Richard Sherman. So these are the things that you have to do during the course of a season. You've got to throw to a receiver who maybe you just met 10 minutes ago. And so I think that Jimmy Garoppolo's got to play better if the Niners are going to have the kind of season they want to have.
100% agree. 100% agree. No one's saying the guy's terrible. He just got to play a little better if they want to win games like that. Because that was a playoff-level game as far as the physicality, the hitting. I mean, guys were getting carted off every other play. I want to ask you about the coaching staffs, though. Because I saw a wrinkle from Pete Carroll and their offense where they had the other tackle out there basically as another tight end,
Fant.
Number 74. And I thought that was brilliant. They were throwing him on Armstead. They throw him on Bosa just to kind of slow things down. And conversely, I was a little disappointed in Kyle Shanahan's play calling. Do you think it was that maybe Kyle thought that Kittle was going to play, and so the entire week building up to it, they had a specific set of plays they were going to run because they assumed Kittle was there? Or was this just, you know, their defensive line just outperformed what Kyle expected, and he adjusted, and they really didn't have any wrinkles? Where do you fall in line on Kyle Shanahan's scheme last night?
I'll give you 3 points. Number one, they really needed Matt Breida to make some of the plays. Matt Breida obviously is a different person, different player, everything than George Kittle, but he needed to pick up some of the slack. He picked up none of it. And I think that's one piece of the puzzle. I think they thought all along it was unlikely that Kittle was going to play. I don't think they put anything in the game plan thinking absolutely categorically George Kittle was going to play. I just think they basically believed that he wasn't going to play and they better get ready to play without him. Now, I do think that if you're San Francisco, you know, you're getting McGlinchey and Staley back, and so you think we're going to be able to handle the rush of this team, because they have a good rush, but they're not, you know, intergalactic. They're not incredible, and they got pushed around a lot. And it's not a good thing for the 49ers that that Jadeveon Clowney probably played the best game of his NFL career last night. So I thought that they would do a better job of keeping Garoppolo clean. And then, look, I'm not I don't want to micromanage the play calling or the game plan or anything like that, because I didn't look at the game that way. The way I looked at this game is there were some plays there to be made by the Niners. I think Garoppolo was surprisingly inaccurate. And also, for a guy who had never shown signs to be a happy feet guy or to look like he wasn't in control, I think I would blame a lot more of it on that and on the inability of Breida to get any traction whatsoever, and on their edges on the offensive line to keep the quarterback in the pocket clean. Those are the things that I would say that really bothered me about their offense.
So let me just sort of combine that you just said, and our guest, of course, is Peter King, a 95.7 The Game NFL insider. Everything you just said about Garoppolo, which is true, he wasn't as accurate as you would hope. We also, I think, have to acknowledge earlier, as you mentioned, a guy we'd never heard of, and his name is Malik Turner, but I didn't remember that either until I looked it up, was catching passes for the Seahawks. And I think we also have to admit that the guys we've been hearing about for the last 3 years on the Niners were out there dropping passes. In fact, 9 drops in last night's game. And Jimmy's stats with Emmanuel Sanders, as opposed to once he got hurt, I mean, the difference is stark. So I think we can say, if you want Jimmy to play better, that's fine. But right now, who Jimmy Garoppolo is, it matters a lot that he has receivers who can catch the ball.
Yeah.
Is there any answer to this to bolster a receiving core at this point? Obviously, they did it somewhat with Emmanuel Sanders. But boy, do you realize how rough the rest is when Kittle and Sanders are both out. Is there any answer to that?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that's why in a game like this, especially with who was missing, you know, you just sometimes have to say, look, Russell Wilson right now, give me one game to win and I'm taking him over everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you have to look at this and say, bad night, we're missing some guys, we're going to be okay. And you know, the only thing that you might look at a bit longingly is that if you played for the tie with 1:50 to go and you ran it 3 times or kneeled 3 times, you could have run out the clock. And, boy, standings would look a lot better today, being 2 games ahead of any team in the NFC in the loss column,
yeah,
versus being a half game ahead of 2 of those teams and having a killer schedule down the stretch. But, hey, you know, I don't want to minimize what happened, but I think that every team in the course of a year has a few valleys for all the peaks, and I wouldn't be that concerned if I were the Niners.
Given what we've seen in the AFC, what are the chances that a team with an 8-8 record or worse can get in the playoffs?
Well, the more I look at it, the more I think Buffalo might sink. And so I think it is, I mean, you just don't know. There's not a lot of great depth in the AFC. If you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers right now and their next 7 games, they're playing teams with a combined record of 17-37. The Pittsburgh Steelers could make the playoffs and have one of the weirdest teams that they've ever had play in a postseason, led by a quarterback who, I'll put it charitably, is still trying to find his way in Mason Rudolph. So you just don't know. But I think top to bottom, the NFC at 4, 5, and 6 is going to be a heck of a lot better than the AFC will be at 4, 5, and 6.
If you're going to pontificate today, who's going to get the number 1 and number 2 seeds out of the NFC?
If I were to guess right now, I would say New Orleans number one and San Francisco number two. That'd just be my guess. And look, this could be one of the most interesting Week 17 games in recent NFL history. You know, just imagine if it comes down to the San Francisco-Seattle rematch with one of those teams being, you know, getting a bye week and the other team being either the fifth or sixth seed. I mean, that is what could be really, really interesting down the stretch.
Is talking about, you said Pittsburgh as the weirdest team you've seen in a long time. Their schedule aside, are they actually in danger of becoming a good team, or are they just going to stay a weird team?
I mean, their offense last week was led by Mason Rudolph, Jalen Samuel, and Deontay Johnson. I mean, those people are not household names in their own household. And so I don't know what to make of them, because the development of Mason Rudolph has been slow. And you need to have a quarterback if you're going to have a really good team, you know, a quarterback playing well. But, Ray, I guess I would make this point. This Steeler team reminds me, and not exactly, but what I was thinking about when I was watching this game the other day, this was like in the days before Bradshaw could play. And if their defense wasn't holding teams to 13 or 16 or 10, they weren't winning the game. And so I think that's a little bit of where they are right now. The interesting thing about their team now is that their defense is scoring points. And Minkah Fitzpatrick is absolutely, totally bizarre as it sounds, would get some Defensive Player of the Year votes right now if the vote were tonight, after 10 weeks. So who knows what's going to happen, but I think the Steelers are a fascinating team to watch over the next few weeks, especially because they have what look to be some eminently winnable games ahead of them.
Peter King, our guest, the 95.7 The Game NFL insider, and of course you know him from NBC Sports, among many other places over the years. Peter, before we let you go, I think we've talked a lot about Monday night. I'm going to throw a Sunday night question at you now. The Dallas Cowboys, I feel like more words have been spent on Jason Garrett failures than any other coach. And I feel like that's true almost every year. And yet here we are in, what are we, year 7 or 8 with Jason Garrett? Is Jerry Jones ever even going to consider a change at head coach?
I think he'll consider a change in January or late December very strongly, you know, unless they make the playoffs and win a game or two in the playoffs. You know, because Jason Garrett is going to be without a contract after this year, and it's definitely been a prove-it season. Before the year, Jerry Jones said, you know, this is the best team I think we've had since our Super Bowl years back in the 90s. So if your owner is saying that about your head coach, and the head coach has his team 5-4, with one of the losses being to one of the worst 3 or 4 teams in football in the New York Jets, I mean, what do you think is going to happen? I think the only thing about Jerry Jones right now is that I think he would have loved to have a shot at Sean Payton. But now that Sean Payton has gotten extended, and I wrote this a few weeks ago, I actually told Payton I was going to write this, and he got a chuckle out of it, but I didn't get an argument out of him. I think Sean Payton has a chance to be the Chuck Knoll of New Orleans, a guy who could stay there 20 years or so. And so we'll see what happens. But my point overall is that I think Jerry Jones has got to find somebody who he's convinced is going to take his team to greater heights. Now, could that be a great college coach right now? Could he get Lincoln Riley to come? I doubt it. Could he get David Shaw to come? I doubt that. And would he be in love with the coordinator who's the flavor of the month? I don't know. Personally, I think if I were him, I'd go hard after Josh McDaniels at the end of this year if he's going to make a change. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I look at the Cowboys and say that this really, the next 6 or 8 weeks is going to be put up or shut up time for Dallas, and I do think they'll make a coaching change if they have a disappointing end to their year.
Yeah, Peter, what do you think about these plucky Raiders, huh? I think they're going to – I honestly think they have a legitimate chance at the division. I also think that they are a playoff team. I think they're going to find a way to get in there. Josh Jacobs has been spectacular. I mean, he reminds me in many ways of like Emmitt Smith, the balance, the power, the speed, the burst, the vision. How good are the Raiders right now?
I mean, it's absolutely amazing they're so close to the Chiefs. And look, they're a win over Cincinnati away from being right with them heading into the last 6 weeks of the season. And so I'd say two things. Just remember one thing, and I couldn't agree with you more about Josh Jacobs. Season ends today. He's the offensive rookie of the year. But, and this is a big but, just remember, his whole time at Alabama, you know, he played 3 years. He had 20 rushes in a game one time in 3 years. And while I'm not saying that, you know, running him as much as the Raiders are is an absolute recipe for disaster, I'm just telling you the season is significantly longer, potentially, in the NFL. And he's never had to carry the ball that much, and there's a few bigger people in the NFL than in college, even though you might say that the SEC is just like the NFL. But I would just caution in that way to say Josh Jacobs is in uncharted territory right now for him. But in an overall sense, I think one of the other things is that I've been so impressed recently, especially with how well Derek Carr is playing and the kind of glue guy that Derek Carr is right now, because they need that. They need that on this team. There's so many young players, and I think he's providing that. I mean, how crazy is it that, you know, they could go down to the wire against a team that most of us, me especially, me at least for one, thought that Kansas City was going to the Super Bowl. And so, look, it's a pleasant surprise, but I definitely don't think it's a pleasant shock, if you know what I mean.
Now that the Dolphins are clearly a juggernaut and not to be stopped by
break
anyone,
them up.
Is Cincinnati the clear and unadulterated worst team in football? Or can we still have faith in Washington and the Jets?
Well, I think Cincinnati is going to end up with the number one pick, which makes me feel hugely sad for either Justin Herbert or Joe, what's his name at LSU?
Burrow or Tua or whoever it is.
Oh, Burrow, yeah. Or Tua. And I feel bad for him because one of those guys is going to go to Cincinnati. And, you know, it's one of those things where do you think that even though I'm sure on draft day, Lamar Jackson was really upset that he lasted until pick number 32, I'm sure he was upset. Do you think he's upset now that he's on the Baltimore Ravens instead of Cincinnati or Arizona or whatever, whoever might have picked them very high in the draft, or the Jets? I mean, I would think he's got to be just thrilled with what happened. So one of the problems with Joe Burrow putting up 45 or whatever he did on Alabama the other day and completing his first 13 balls and playing out of sight is that the team that is most likely to get the first pick, and by the way, would be very unlikely to trade that first pick. So if you're the best quarterback in college football, your reward is being sentenced to play for the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, how happy would you be? I'm sure those guys are not really consumed by that, but at some point they're going to wake up and realize that, you know, they're going to have to play for a team that probably is going to be bad for most of the time they're there.
The inevitable result of being the number one overall pick in a draft like this. Yep. Peter King, ladies and gentlemen, 95.7 The Game NFL Insider. Catch him on NBC Sports. Peter, we always appreciate the time. Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.